Good evening, everyone. My name is Mark Frye. I'm the Chair of Streets Committee. I'd like to call the meeting to order, attending the meeting this evening are myself as Chair, Mr. Hanem, Mr. Mishka, Mrs. Westfall, who are all members of the committee. Also, members of council, Mrs. Hussman, Mrs. Capellini, Mr. Lukey, Mayor Stow, and various members of the administration are here as well. We have two subjects to cover this evening. One will not probably take very long. The other, when we met the last time in Streets Committee, one of the things we requested of the administration and Mr. Aller and the Streets Department is to run an estimate of, or projection of what the street PCR ratings would look like starting 5 years from now in the event that we started to make various decisions on additional street investments. So Mr. Aller and the Streets Department put those estimates together and have that for us to review this evening. And with that, I would like to hand the meeting over to Mr. Aller for his explanation. And you should have gotten at your desk a large PCR estimate for 2021.
Yes, if you take a look, the handouts that they provided were the map that Mr. Frye just referred to, and then also a, I'll call it a proposed five-year capital improvement plan that is centered on roadway improvements, but also has some other items that we need to be aware of that the general fund, the capital improvement fund, we'll have to finance as well. I know this isn't a finance committee meeting, but just wanted to have those projects there. You know, bridges and culverts and stormwater and street projects kind of all go hand in hand. So I included those projects as well. The projects that you have listed in the capital improvement plan, you know, we have the projects listed in alphabetical order, obviously, so it's easier to track those. This spreadsheet that you have before you, can see at the top, it's titled Ohio Public Works Commission. This is basically the five-year capital improvement plan that we have to submit with all of our OPWC applications for funding. So we just kind of we continue to use that citywide. There's no sense. We do have some other things that we use it to track projects, but this is the final list, if you will, on when projects are going to get done on a year-to-year basis. If you take a look at, you know, going through the years 17 through 21, you know, obviously depending on the type of project and things of that nature, the way we prioritize as to when to put projects into this list is the pavement condition rating that we spoke about at the last meeting, and we provided you the 2016 ratings that were done this past year. And we take a look at how projects have deteriorated over the course of the last 2 years, what their scores have dropped to. Are we seeing increased deterioration, or is it what can be expected? And you know, we have another 5, 10 years, whatever the case may be, out of that pavement. And so we take a look at, you know, the what it's going to cost to either resurface or reconstruct that project and get a cost estimate together. And then we take a look at our lowest ranking streets, if you will. If you remember, the lower the score, the worse the street. And we take a look at those and we start prioritizing them and trying to balance out the cost on a year-to-year basis as much as possible. It's, you know, if a pavement is really bad, it's going to jump to the top of the list, and we're going to slide some projects around. So a project that you may see, let's just start right at the top, Acres Road, Monroe to Alexis. And right now that's in 2018. We have another project that really starts to deteriorate faster, and we see next year that we've got to bump some things around, that may get moved, excuse me, to 2019 or 2020. So it's always a liquid and always a flexible list, but it's the basis of what we plan for. If you take a look at all of the projects that are listed in the roadway section, and about midway on page two, you have the roadway subtotal. And those are the costs that if we did all of the projects that we're recommending that we do, and they occur in the timeframe that we're recommending they occur, we don't have to move everything around, you can see that our annual program ranges from, you know, just under 1.2 million to a high of just over 5 million. And that's just based on project costs. That year, 2019, if you look down through the whole year, the primary project in that year is the Whetstone Park area. That's the area to just to the north of the new ProMedica facility. Roan, Alger,
Schultz.
That area there and all of those streets, McGregor. That is an area that we go in, the city has gone in routinely and had to mill and fill and resurface that area. The primary reason being there's no storm drainage up there, so there's no under drains underneath the pavement. And it's just like your house. If you don't have a good base, your house isn't gonna last very long. And that's the same thing that we have up there. And our recommendation is to basically reconstruct that area, provide storm sewers, provide under drains on that on those streets. Other areas that we've done that similar type projects is the Highland Park area. And that was just done, what, 3 or 4 years ago. It was being done just as I came into the city. Another project that we did something similar with the under drains in that is, I know that was the fabric base, wasn't it, for McCord River. But those areas, if you get the water away, pavement will last. If you don't have a place for it to go, it's going to set, it's going to freeze, and it's going to start popping the pavement and separating the pavement just cause more deterioration, and that's what's occurred in that area. A couple of the streets up there were only done, they were done like 11 or 12 years ago, and it's past time for them to be done. Those streets are streets that have been on our wish list for the last couple of years, but we've had to cut them because of the budget concerns that we've had the last couple of years. So if we reconstruct that area the way it should be, you know, we'll do that in 2019, and then we won't have to do anything to that for, you know, 20, 25 years before we even have to touch it. That's a large-scale project.
And we do that all in 1 year because that's the only way you can do the sewers?
Again, that may be a phased project, and we talked about it. You know, this is a flexible document. We may take a look at spreading that out over a couple of years. One of the advantages to doing that, today we don't know, but we may be able to take advantage of some grant programs, OPWC being one, and if we can do that and be able to capitalize over a two-year period, we may do that. We may split that up. You know, either way, you're spending those funds.
So let me make sure I understand this. Some of these funding codes you've got here, Mr. Aller, in this one column, where, mm-hmm. talks about local state, and local OPWC. In some of these cases, like for that one project, which is the largest expenditure that the administration you are suggesting, there may be OPWC monies available for that as well?
It's potential. In the funding codes that you see there, they are only known funding. So you don't list OPWC until you know you have OPWC funding.
Gotcha. But it's eligible for that.
Correct.
And based upon your experience and administration's experience with this type of thing, and I know there's a scoring mechanism and there's a lot of machinations that you guys go into to try to figure out what our chances are and putting projects together. Of all of these other projects, most of them, do you think, or some of them, or all of them would get some sort of funding potentially?
Not all of them, by any means. The streets that typically fare better are your higher volume streets, because a large factor in transportation type projects with OPWC, and as well as ODOT, very few of these, if any, are ODOT eligible. But, you know, the traffic volume is a big factor.
Okay.
If you have Monroe Street, it is going to score more points than Garden Park Drive, just because of the volume of traffic, so.
Right. And you've got some descriptions here, and if I recall correctly, there's different levels. There's micro-surfacing, which we've got a number of projects, which is the least expensive. There's mill and fill, is that correct?
Correct.
And then there's a complete reconstruction.
Correct.
Which of these is the complete reconstructions, other than obviously the Whetstone, $4.5 million?
Yeah, the Whetstone at this time, that what we have on for the 5-year plan, the Whetstone project, the Main Street project on page one, and the Fairview Parkwood project. Those three projects are full reconstruction for the course of the next 5 years.
And how many miles of roads do we have here for this $16 million that you guys are projecting? Do you have a sense of that? Is it 5 miles? Is it 10 miles? Is it 20 miles?
I wouldn't want to venture a guess on that.
Okay.
Yeah. Because what you see here with five, we actually have our list.
Yeah, I get it. It's a little longer than that.
10, yeah.
Right.
So I would hate to venture a guess on how many we actually have in here.
Hey, Mark, if I could step in a minute about the OPWC question.
Mm-hmm.
The Kasich administration is resisting restoring local government funds. And as a result, some of the state legislators went to him and said, okay, where do you want to put the money in? And he said, capital money. And the state legislature has approved an increase in the OPWC funding by 20% for next year and another 20% 2 years after that. So there's going to be hundreds of millions of dollars more out there than there is now. That is where some of that money's going.
Okay. Great. That's wonderful news. Obviously helpful. Now the other thing I was curious about, Mr. Aller, is you've got a line item here for equipment. If you could just briefly describe some of those expenditures that you're projecting.
We're much of our equipment, and in some cases, it's the equipment that perhaps may be in one of our other departments. Say water, sewer, if you recall last year, or actually this year, I'm sorry, we purchased a new truck in the streets department that kind of did, we're going to do the hand-me-down thing once it gets delivered. But, you know, we have several vehicles and pieces of equipment that are, you know, coming to their end of life. The dump truck that we're purchasing this year, you know, each large-scale dump truck is $165,000, basically, for round numbers. We have one more of those that needs to be replaced. We have another one that we're thinking in another 4 years is probably going to be to that level. And so we have those in the capital improvement listing. And then we have one-ton dump trucks or pickups in for those other years. The majority of our non-vehicular traffic, if you will, our backhoes and loaders and things of that nature, we're in pretty good shape as far as year-wise, hour-wise, repair-wise. So we're in pretty good shape as far as that concerned, but some of our vehicles are, our mechanics are getting to know them quite well. That's when, I'm not a year person, you know, I don't say 10 years, it's time to get rid of the vehicle. I'm not a mileage person, when we hit 80,000 miles, it's time to get rid of the vehicle. If my mechanics are starting to see the vehicle more than the person that's supposed to be operating the vehicle, then that's when, you know, that's when it shows up on this list, so.
And as an incremental question, we had talked in a prior streets meeting about a rate of about $2.2 million a year is what it would take in order to keep things going from a streets perspective, that we had invested a lot many years ago and had a lower intensity level for the last few years, and we were now in a position where we looked like we had to start ramping those numbers back up. This is obviously the reflection of that ramp up, correct?
Correct.
And if we go down this path, as you're suggesting here, your best estimate for this PCR value on the city map for the streets is what we would see if we were all sitting here 4 or 5 years from now.
Correct. Yes, we assumed that we were going to perform the projects that are listed in the capital improvement plan. TMACOG has generated a PCR reduction program that kind of estimates that if a street is in, if it's currently scoring at an 85 and gets 15,000 vehicles a day, they put it into this program and estimate that in 5 years it'll be, instead of an 85, it'll be a 75. Mm-hmm. And so we've input our system into that program, worked with TMACOG on it, and this is what that projection is, that in 2021 our PCRs would break into the different scoring categories. These are the same scoring categories that we provided to you previously, where you had the 2016 PCR values, and then this map just shows that five-year projection of where we'd be if we performed all of those projects.
Mm-hmm. And looking at the distribution of miles of roads and the percentages, there's pretty reasonably even split amongst the categories, with the exception of the 76 to 85 category. So to maintain this sort of disposition of our roads, we would have to continue on with the current projected intensity level for the foreseeable future, even beyond the 5 years.
I think you would. If you see your you know, your streets that would score less than 50, you know, you're at 20%. I don't know that, you know, that we really want to, you know, the goal is to get that, those ones that are scoring less than 50, you know, down into the 10 to 15 range.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that we would need to continue our more aggressive method of maintaining the streets. Otherwise, those scores are, you know, you can see 50s at 20%, and then that next category, 51 to 65, we're at 24%. So, you know, those are going to kind of continue to drop. Mm-hmm. And so it's something that will be in an aggressive cycle for several years, I would foresee at this point.
Okay. Other members of council have questions for Mr. Aller?
Well, if we do this $5 million project in the Westcombe Park area, what do you find that?
That would be a decision of.
I mean, logically, I mean, if you take out that $4 million expenditure, now you're looking at about $1.3 million a year, which is a lot different 2.4. A huge difference in terms of, well, in terms of the budget and in terms of the revenue deficits that we're projecting using the numbers we're using. So if we're funding at 1.3 or 1.4 on an average basis rather than an extra million, we got it. That's a big difference in terms of,
but you have
particularly the revenue decision that we have been wrestling with in our finance.
Understand.
So if we bond that money and pay in 25 years, I mean, the last time we had that big an expenditure, we bonded the water tower. Okay, so if we have that kind of reconstruction, trying to pay that off in a single year or build up a fund in a 4 or 5 year period for a 25 year benefit, doesn't make a lot of sense, particularly if the cost of that is increasing our income tax or our real estate taxes. Okay, so.
But it, you have to, you do have to be prepared. We're going to have more large scale projects. A project that you don't see on here is I'm not saying that we wouldn't bond it, but you know, obviously, when you bond something, you have the debt payments, so that has to factor into your capital. Expense each year, and there are other larger projects. The Lincoln Woods area isn't on file.
I see that.
So you know that is likely to be in the next 5 year period. So you know, if you continue to bond those, now that those funds in those low years, you now don't have those debt payments. You're making the debt payments, and you don't have that money to do projects. So,
but it's
a balance.
But when you have those size, that size of expenditure, taxing current residents to pay for it, that big an expenditure for that's going to yield a benefit to the community for 25 years,
yes,
really puts a disproportionate tax load on, front loads that tax load. So, you know, what I see in these numbers is about $1.3 million a year. That one exception.
So if that's the level that you begin to bond at, and the question is, what other projects come in at that same amount, right? So you have a feeling of, you know, you mentioned Lincoln Woods, but are there other ones that look like that too? So you have an idea of, if you did that, I mean, what would it look like further on down the road with other projects?
Yeah, that's a finance committee question. it's
absolutely.
You know, you have to. The bond market is out there for the large-scale projects, no question. But our annual debt payments are fairly high. Is that a fair statement?
Close to $2.2 million.
Yeah.
But I guess the question is, what other areas, what other neighborhoods do you have that require that much investment to get them there, right? We talked about Lincoln Woods is the same because that's a big deal too, right?
I mean, those are your two largest ones right now within a 10-year.
Yeah. Okay.
Those are the two largest. But, you know, again, you know, that's the short-term foreseeable future. Monroe Street is always going to be a high-cost project, even if it's a melt and fill. It's going to be a high-cost project. You know, so those types of projects. One of the projects that's on here is the replacement of the Silica Road Bridge. You know, it seems like a very simple bridge, but that's almost $1 million.
Monroe Street, so those are very public fund, OPW help on those, more likely than a private neighborhood of Cameron.
Oh, absolutely, yeah, but more likely than a private neighborhood, yeah.
I mean, we're not going to get any public funds to do. I mean, we're not going to get any significant public funds to redo the Whetstone Park area, or for that matter,
Lincoln Woods, no, not likely.
You know, the public, the OPW funds, you know, I mean, those are competitions, and when we're going to score much better on a Monroe Street, or Silica, even Silica Road. Mm-hmm. But,
other questions or from members of council? certainly I appreciate the information, Mr. Aller, on this.
Yeah, this is great work, Kevin.
Yeah, this was a lot of effort, obviously, by yourself and your staff members, and you should be applauded for that effort, and we certainly appreciate this. This is certainly, you know, we never like to see these kinds of numbers, obviously, come before us, but at the same time, as we've discussed in the past, we need to maintain our streets in the fashion in which the citizens expect and demand. So with that, I'll close this particular item in the Streets Committee, and there was one other thing. I had an email from one of our citizens about the railroad crossing on Convent, right there by South Briar, and her concern was the maintenance or lack of maintenance of that particular railroad crossing. And I believe I already know what the answer is going to be, but I wanted to just put it on the public record as to how we work with the railroads in regards to those crossings.
Sure. We are aware of that crossing. We have had complaints from time to time. It seems like they come in ebbs and flows. Basically, when it comes to railroad crossings, we are, you know, I started to say we're very limited, but really we have no say in when they actually get addressed. The railroad right-of-way is theirs. It is committed to them. They have full authority as to what gets done, when it gets done, and all those decisions. We can try to push and prod, and we have done so on the Convent crossing. For those of you that have been around a few years, when I first came on board, we were struggling trying to get the Monroe Street crossing with, you know, 15,000 plus vehicles a day, trying to get that one addressed by the railroad company, and it was about a two-year project to finally get it resolved. It's on their radar. They're aware of it. They have indicated that they plan to come in and do some, just a couple saw cuts on each side of the track and address the asphalt approaches, but they, at this time, do not have any plans to do anything with the railroad ties that are between the tracks. And so that's the part that's really, you get the thump when you go across it, and at this time they do not have any plans to do anything with that.
Is there a point at which the safety of vehicular traffic starts to provide us a little more leverage?
Yeah, one of the things that we, each time I talked to them, I said, look guys, this is getting worse, you know, type thing. I need you to take another look and try to get it to where they, they'll either get tired of hearing from me or they'll agree that it needs to be addressed. And, you know, again, there probably is that breaking point, but it's up to them to decide when that breaking point
is. So even then, if we have no control over that whatsoever?
No.
Two questions, Kevin. One, do you have any idea how much in disrepair this particular crossing is versus others that the railroad has to deal with? I mean, is this in really bad shape on the scale of things, or is it not?
I would say based on the Monroe Street experience, probably more of a personal observation than anything, it's not real high on their list. If it was one that they were highly concerned about, they would come in and address it. The one thing that concerns me is when we first started receiving phone calls on this, frankly, I didn't think it was that bad. And I knew the railroad company, we passed it on to the railroad company, but I knew the railroad company wasn't going to do anything. I think it's getting worse quickly. So, you know, I hope we don't have a situation like we had on Monroe Street where we had to wait for it to just be nothing but junk, and then they finally come in, but...
So, who does the railroad pay attention to? I mean, is there a federal agency that regulates railroads, or is there a state agency that regulates railroads?
Well, the railroad doesn't regulate the railroad, but the railroad determines...
Is there oversight by the federal government?
I
remember reading in civics class in ninth grade about some sort of federal railroad regulatory agency. Is that not in place?
I have never dealt with any such agency as it exists.
Okay. I only wonder if possibly Congressman Latta or even Congressman Kaptur could help us, their offices could help us think about this. And I'm happy to make the contact, but maybe staff could make the contact about that.
I think they're motivated largely by their own financial exposures. To the extent that cars and vehicles are damaged crossing their crossings and they get sued,
mm-hmm.
that motivates them. Mm-hmm. My dealings with the railroad and a number of different areas is that they are about as independent as anybody I've ever dealt with.
It's difficult. And I think Doug is right. It's, you know, am I starting to take a chance that I'm going to start buying, you know, the undercarriage of cars, the amount of traffic the track sees, you know, it's not a high priority track form because it serves the elevator, you know, just in Battle of the Lake and that's it. So it's, you know, it's not a high priority track form, so it'll come down to the damage control. So, and I think we're getting there. It's unfortunate that.
My experience is that they are very defensive about any intrusion on their.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. A lot of our, you know, a lot of the calls that we get, you know, kind of, you know, we'll just go in and do it. I have no desire to see my guy being put into a railroad officer's car and carted away. They are very protective of.
And this is Norfolk and Southern?
Yes.
And to your reference, Mr. Aller, that my understanding is that the railroad has their own police force
mm-hmm.
and can enforce inside their right of way like they're a police force. Mm-hmm. Is that correct? Even
yes,
if it's inside the city limits?
Yes.
And if we trespass on their property?
Right. So we're not even allowed to repair it.
Right.
Even if we wanted to.
Mm-hmm. No. We were getting prepared to do a sanitary project, and we had people on the tracks milling around and talking about the project. And before I got back to my office, I had a phone call wanting to know what was going on because they saw us in the right of way. Now, I don't know how they saw us. They routinely have planes flying the railroad routes and see if anybody's doing anything inside and that kind of stuff. So I didn't see one that day, so I don't know if that was out. But yeah, they're very protective of it.
Yeah. Any questions or comments from other members of council in regards to that? Anything else to come before the streets committee?
Will yes. you, Mr. Chairman, will somebody be in touch with that community citizen to get back to that person, make sure that they understand this discussion took place and what our next steps are?
I will reach out to that person and let them know that we discussed it and that our options are somewhat limited.
No, our options are not somewhat limited.
Okay, they're
we don't have
non-existent.
We have no options as a city. She has the same power of persuasion and complaint that we do. And if she and her neighbors, you know, if private people complain about them, that helps as much as Kevin calling. So we're not the place to direct these complaints.
Fair enough.
And you can tell her that we are working at this.
Right, absolutely.
But she should echo us by contacting the railroad directly.
You know, Doug, in that regard, I think we've learned on a variety of matters over the last couple months that public
pressure.
Involvement helps. And I wonder if we shouldn't take our website, the city website, and create a entry under railroad complaints and provide links to the individuals at the railroad that should be hearing from citizens. Because I think if we help them with their complaint and facilitate their complaints and their number goes up, that's one small step toward moving the needle and getting some help. I'm guessing that before somebody gets frustrated enough to send an email to the council, they've looked on the website and can't find anything, right? So is there a way that we could add that?
That's a great idea.
Yep.
We did apply pressure from Monroe Street a couple of years ago, even though it took a while. I started writing about it, and I took pictures of it, and I put it in the mayor's message.
Exactly.
They did respond to it.
Okay. Yeah.
6 months earlier than they said they would.
Yeah. When the mayor put it into the mayor's message, they didn't like their name being out there in the negative light like that. So maybe that's, we may be to that point again.
Great. So I'll reach back out to the citizen who inquired about it and let her know the status, and that the administration will be making a link with the proper contact people. In the next few weeks. Is that fair, Mr. Aller?
Yes, because okay. Yes, I have most of them. I have contact.
I figured that you did. I just wanted to, I didn't want to put you on too tight a deadline, but give you by the end of the week or whatever. So, anything else to come before the Streets Committee? If not, could I have a motion for adjournment?
So moved.
Second. Moved and seconded. Any further discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carried. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Jim.